Welcome to WhiskeyCast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 347 for December 11th, 2011. Support for WhiskeyCast comes from Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey. Find out more at redbreastwhiskey.com and join the Stillhouse to get your own personalized whiskey journal. Coming up in a few minutes...
380, 400, here we are, 420, do you want, 420, 450, with you, 480, 5, over here at 5, no mistake, selling here at 5, well done sir, at 5, 128, you didn't get a watch, you've got some whiskey, well done, drink and enjoy.
That's Malcolm Barber of Bonhams. He was wielding the hammer in New York City the other night during the Bonhams pre-Christmas whiskey auction. We'll have much more on that auction, as well as a guide to bidding in whiskey auctions, coming up later on. I'll also have the calendar of events, the emails of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First off, let's look at the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Platinum is almost as expensive as gold these days, and it's also the latest addition to Johnny Walker's line of blended scotches. Johnny Walker Platinum label is making its debut this month in Asia. It's an 18-year-old blended scotch that will be available at first in South Korea, Vietnam, and the region's airport shops, but will be available throughout Asia during 2012. Also hitting travel retail, at least in Dubai, the Naked Grouse. It's a cousin to the famous Grouse blended scotch, but uses more whiskeys aged in European oak sherry casks instead of the famous Grouse's recipe that depends more on American oak bourbon casks. Dubai Airport will have the Naked Grouse through next April. It's also available in the UK and China. Glenglassaugh celebrates the arrival this coming week of its first single malt produced after the distillery reopened 3 years ago this month. The whiskey will be bottled on the 16th, with limited amounts available for sale exclusively at the distillery. There's also a new 28-year-old Master Distillers selection and a 37-year-old bottling exclusively for sale in North America. I received samples of both this week, along with the 36-year-old Glenglassaugh. The English Whiskey Company, meanwhile, is re-releasing one of its more popular bottlings. Chapter 7 was finished in rum casks. Fewer than 1,000 bottles of the re-release are available. Duncan Taylor is coming out with a new line of single-cask bottlings. The Dimensions range will become the new core line of whiskeys from Duncan Taylor and will be unchill-filtered with no caramel coloring. The initial 10 releases include a 1993 Aberlour, a 1988 Bunahavan, a Mortlach 1989, a 1995 Kleinleash, and a 1978 Cameron Bridge single grain whiskey. Buffalo Trace is releasing two more bourbons in its experimental collection range. Back in 2002, they produced some bourbon using rice and oats in place of rye in the mash bill. Both varieties were aged for 9 years and 5 months and will be on sale in limited quantities. They're bottled at 45% ABV. We're getting two new Talisker's and a look for the overall line. Diageo plans to start making Talisker 25 and 30-year-old malts available on a regular but limited basis. In the past, those vintages have been available only as part of the Special Releases series at Cask Strength. Now they'll be available at the standard Talisker bottling strength of 45.8% ABV. Meanwhile, new cartons for the Talisker 10-year-old, featuring photos from Sky-based photographer Kaylin McLean, are rolling out in the UK this month, and the entire range will be repackaged over the coming year worldwide. Finally, I'll have the results of this week's Bonhams auction in New York in a few minutes, but McTeers held its final whiskey auction of the year in Glasgow this past week. A 1946 McAllen fetched £3,600, or slightly more than $5,600. A 1938 McAllen went for £2,000, about $3,100. And an unusual bottle of Largy Meenock 12-year-old Islay single malt distilled back in 1967 and bottled in 1979 for an Edinburgh wine guild sold for £1,600. That's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Unnecessarily well-made. Let's check the comments of the week now, brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. I didn't mention this the last time around, but the Aldi supermarkets in the UK were able to get their hands on a cask of 40-year-old Speyside single malt from an undisclosed distillery. They bottled it under the Glenbridge label at £50 a bottle. The 3,000 bottles sold out earlier this week within minutes, since each Aldi store only got a few bottles. Colin Hampton White was lucky enough to get one. He posted a link on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page to the tasting notes on his blog. Matt Wooler in Australia posted a reminder that Dramcember is officially underway now. The goal of Dramcember is to taste one new whiskey each day between the 9th of Dramcember and the 9th of Drambuary. There's also an official poem to go along with this. He's posted it at the Facebook page, too. I'll let you read it there. And finally, got an email this week from Lex Tomaszewski in Cleveland. I just finished listening to WhiskeyCast 345 and wanted to share that the interview with Tom Bullitt was superb. It was a fascinating narrative discussing history, family, and whiskey. I often find the stories and history, as you detailed with Bullitt, as equally important as tasting notes. Thanks for providing the rich background into this wonderful world of whiskey. Keep up the great work and happy holidays, Lex. Thank you very much, Lex. By the way, Lex was one of the panelists on the latest edition of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. It's available to download at the WhiskeyCast website and through iTunes. We'll be recording December's tasting panel this coming week. If you'd like to be part of a tasting panel for a future episode, just email me and put tasting panel in the subject line. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and you can always post general comments at our Facebook page, too. The comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker Blue Label. If you're looking for a special holiday gift, think about personally engraved bottles of Blue Label. Check with your local retailer for details. You can find out more at Johnny Walker's Facebook page, too. Let's check the calendar of events now, brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. Amrut whiskey from India and Old Fitzgerald bourbon from Kentucky don't usually go together, but they will on December 19th at New York City's Ward 3 Bar in a side-by-side tasting. Nichols and Perks in Stourbridge, England will host a tasting of Jameson and the single-pot stills of Middleton Range on December 22nd. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society has Hogmanay tastings on New Year's Eve at the Vaults in Leith, Scotland, and the Members' Rooms in Edinburgh. Catoctin Creek Distillery in Purcellville, Virginia will host a distilling workshop on January 14th. I'll be in Victoria, British Columbia, the weekend of January 20th through the 22nd for the Victoria Whiskey Festival. And Woodford Reserve will have a Valentine's Day dinner at the distillery on February 11th. You'll find a full calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Kevin O'Gorman, master of maturation, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
It's the combination of two barrels together that impart a lot of the flavour for the Redbreast. You have the Oloroso sherry, imparts a sort of a sherry note, a nice sweet note to the Redbreast. And then on the other side, you have the American barrel, which gives lovely toasted wood, a sort of vanilla, a bit of sweetness. And really, it's about combining these two casks together that make up the Redbreast that produces such a fantastic whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, know Redbreast.
Bonhams will hold its final whiskey auction of the year this week in Edinburgh, with the highlight being a special 55-year-old Glenfiddich. It's the first of 11 Janet Sheed Roberts Reserve bottles to be auctioned for charity, and is expected to sell for between £30,000 and £35,000, or around $50,000. Now that's double the top bid at the Bonhams auction this past week in New York City. Before the auction began, I spent some time with Bonhams whiskey specialist, Martin Green.
We have a wide range of single malt whiskies that we're going to be selling, including things like Black Beaumont 1964. We have 55-year-old Macallan and Lelique decanters. We've got very rare 1928 Macallan. We have a wide range of Ardbeg, for example, coming up in the sale. We have a few very rare blended whiskies. Historically and statistically, the pre-Christmas whiskey auctions at Bonhams, whether they be located in Hong Kong, New York or Edinburgh, are among the most successful that we hold throughout the calendar year.
Yeah, the What does it take to get a whiskey into this auction? If this is one of your best of the year, do you hold things back for the pre-Christmas auctions? Do you does it take a very special whiskey to make it to one of these auctions?
It very much depends on the people who are selling and what they want. I mean, obviously, as an auction house, we offer this service throughout the year with in Edinburgh quarterly sales at the moment, in New York with two per year, and in Hong Kong with two per year. It also can depend on where the bottles are actually located and whether or not it's feasible and cost effective to ship to New York, or whether it's lying stateside, if it's cost effective to ship it to Scotland for sale. There are very many aspects which play a part in what we sell at what time of year.
And I imagine customs regulations take into account there as well, right?
Yes, exactly. There are so many different factors that contribute to where and what we sell and when.
For the novice who has never been to one of these auctions before, what do they need to know when they come in the door?
They need to know that basically they have to register. They have to be an approved Bonhams customer. And you know, if they're looking for advice about what they should be buying, or if they have a price range and a budget that they want to sort of follow, we are on hand to give that kind of advice.
And you just can't walk in off the street and start bidding then, right?
You can walk off the street and start bidding, providing you have the procedure of registration and approval in place before the auction starts.
Are there any pitfalls or anything that first-timers or that novices to auctions need to watch out for?
Well, for example, we have a buyer's premium which is payable on the amount of the hammer price. So that's an additional charge which some people may or may not have to build into their budgets. And I like to think that, you know, with the expertise that we have, you know, the lots that we are offering for sale are obviously authentic, and, you know, they are priced at a very realistic level.
And we're not just talking about massively expensive bottles. We're talking, in many cases, there are lots here that anyone realistically could afford that may even be in the $100 to $200 range, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's something for everyone in these sales. You know, there are everyday drinking malts, which, you know, wouldn't really benefit from being kept and should be drunk. And there are equally collectibles, which indeed become investments over time.
When we see auctions like this, because I report on these auction results regularly, the same whiskeys seem to be coming up consistently at auction. 1964 Black Bowmore, as you mentioned, 1955 Macallans, 1946, 48, immediate post-war Macallans, the Lalique decanters. What makes some whiskeys more collectible than others to the point where they show up at almost every major auction?
Rarity. I mean, one day, you know, they may not appear at auction. Rarity and, you know, the smaller releases that people are desperate to get, because, you know, they are looking at the long term. They're looking at what they might do with that product in 10 years, 20 years' time. You know, I'm seeing things coming back into my sales that were bought with me 20 years ago. So it's a cycle, but it's a commodity that, again, statistically and historically it's holding its value.
Is it better than wine in terms of an investment?
I wouldn't say it was better than wine. It has a much longer shelf life, though, and that's part of the attraction. When it's bottled, the maturing process stops, the spirit stays the same. So, and it's not so susceptible to atmospheric changes.
Have there been whiskies that have come across your table that you've said, I'd like to bid on this one myself and sort of maybe perhaps invest in myself? And have you ever actually bid on your own whiskies at auction?
Well, there are certain guidelines that as a Bonhams person that we have to follow. We can't bid on our own sales when we're not allowed to. So I could place a bid. Occasionally, yes, there will be the odd thing that I would like to buy. But I have to say it would not be at the sort of top end of the market, not for me.
How often do you turn down items?
It depends really for what reason I would turn something down. It could be because I don't believe it to be authentic, in which case I would not take it for sale. It could be because the value falls below the threshold of which it would be profitable for a prospective seller to actually put it onto the market, or it might be that something is just really not for us, it's really not suitable for one of our sales.
That's the latter two are the ones I meant, when you don't think it's going to be worthwhile to sell it, or it's just not suitable. How often does that happen?
It does happen quite frequently. It does happen quite frequently. I'm quite discerning as to what I take for sale. And, you know, I'm a great believer in keeping the quality of what we're selling up.
How would someone, if they wanted to assess whether they have a whiskey that's of value, how would they get in touch with you? And is that something you can provide them with as an estimate?
Yeah, we do it on a, you know, daily basis. My colleague here in New York and I work very closely, as I do with my colleague in Hong Kong. And it's simply a case of going to our website, where you will find contact information for, you know, the three people who are dealing with whiskey. And we do provide valuations.
Has someone ever come to you with something and you've just looked at it and said, I have never seen that before, that I didn't even know that existed, and just been completely flabbergasted?
Yes, it does happen. Not that frequently, but it does happen.
Can you give me an example?
The bottle of Mutter Bowmore was one of them, and I'm trying to think recently what I saw. I think it was something in one of my the Glenlivet 1883 that we sold in October. That was, you know, that was a lovely one to see. I know, you know, it was being sold by the family themselves, and so I hadn't seen that before, for example.
What's the most unusual item that you've had come across the table that, in terms of the 1883s, but the most unusual whiskey that you've seen come across?
Okay, well, if I'm thinking back over my 25 years in doing this as a career, things like, I think occasionally I've had Danish whiskey come up in a sale a long time ago. I can't really remember what the details were. But, you know, you're always seeing unusual things, you know, in the course of the job.
How did you wind up doing this for a living and making this your career 25 years ago?
Well, I started basically in wine, and which then whiskey became part of, when I was with Christie's in Scotland, and it's something that just gathered momentum over a period of years till it's got to where it is now.
Did you ever think whiskey auctions would become as big as they have been? We now have indexes tracking the sales of whiskeys at auction.
Well, like, to be honest, you know, in the beginning, probably not, but as time went on, you know, I had great hopes that it would turn out as it has, which is very pleasing, and yeah, very pleased that it's so successful.
Lot 52, Springbank Local Barley. What should we say for this one with the bids? 650, 700 down here. 700 here, 50, 8, 50, 9, 50, 1,000, 11, 12. 12 in the second row. So we're saying, what, 13 at the back, 14, 15, 1,600, 1,700. Now it's against you, sir. 1,700. Phone's waiting. 1,700. Bids up at the back. 1,700. All done. 1,800, he said. Thinking time there. What about you, sir? 1,800. What, a little bit of thinking time? Selling at 1,800, then up front at 1,800. What do I say? Selling at 18.
That's Malcolm Barber, the managing director of Bonhams. He presided over the auction, in which the top bid went to the 1928 Macallan Martin mentioned. Let's listen.
50-year-old, a lot of interest internationally coming in. Where should we start? 9,000 the bid. 9,000 the bid. 9,000. 9,000. 500, thank you. 10,000 down here. 500. 11,000. 12,000. What about you, sir? 13,000, he said. 14,000. 15,000. 16,000. 17,000. 18,000. 19,000. It's only a number, sir, not a barrier. 20,000. 20,000. 21,000. $21,000, sir. Take another look. 21,000 and selling. Last time at 21,000 and selling here at 21. What do I say? Your lot, sir. Congratulations.
Mendy Berkowitz wasn't bidding on that 1928 Macallan. He had a more modest but equally passionate goal in mind.
It's very interesting, very fast. I think, you know, you have to really do your research before you come, because otherwise you have no context as to whether or not the prices are fair or even market. But it's very interesting. A lot of characters here as well.
kind of went by fast, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I first came, I saw 400 lots, and I'm like, how long are they going to take for each lot? But they're really moving through fairly quickly, you know, less than 30 seconds a lot. And but it's interesting. It's definitely bids on each lot.
And you got the one whiskey you came for, right?
Yeah, I came for one lot, which was the Woodford Reserve Master Collection, and I was able to get it for more or less the price I wanted, $10 over. But in the end, you know, I was very happy, very interesting.
But they're whiskeys that essentially you paid not much more than retail for, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that would definitely went into the research that I did beforehand and make sure that, you know, really the good part about the auction is that they're rare and they're hard to find. And if you can find something that's for a fair price and retail price, then, you know, it's good to have the auction. You pay the auction premium for finding it where you need it.
You're going to come back and do this again?
Absolutely. Even if I don't come to bid, I think I'm just going to come to watch because it's just interesting. And you get to see bottles and people, you know, that you don't normally get to see. And it gives you a feel for what the collector market's for, like, and what people want. What's the demand for different products and different brands.
How's your collection coming?
Very slow. I'm really, you know, I go back and forth on the internet debates about the different whether you should collect, whether you should drink, and I'm kind of 50-50 with that. And you know, I feel like I'm just targeting very specific whiskeys to you know, and that's what I'm going to collect, as opposed to trying to get one of everything. It's just really going to target a couple of collections, like the Woodford Master Collection and some others, you know, that I want to try to have a complete collection for. And you know, if in 20-30 years I decide to sell them or I decide to drink them, I'll have the option then.
Malt maniac Peter Silver is featured in the latest issue of The Whiskey Advocate in a focus on whiskey collectors. He was at the auction, but doing more selling than bidding. He had about 90 bottles of whiskey on the block.
I think I did pretty well. Most of the whiskey I sold went for somewhere in the middle to the higher point of the ranges I expected it to go.
And then you also got the one you wanted at the end, right?
I got the Talisker Cask Strength. I think it's a 20-year-old from the distillery. I own another one, and I'm bringing it to Arbageddon, so I wanted to have one that I could, you know, actually taste and hang on to. So I'm very glad that I have another one because I love Talisker.
Do you have a lot of fun at these auctions? I know you were sort of sweating during the middle of the thing.
I was just waiting to see where prices were going and whether people were going to bid the way they bid last year when I did it, sold at the auction, where people were paying well beyond the high end of the estimates. And this year there was a little less of that, sadly, but still it was very worthwhile to sell some whiskey.
And that's just because you had just far too much of it around the house, right?
I've always had far too much of it, but some of these were duplicates where I bought two bottles and I had one where I didn't really need to drink it, or I managed to taste the whiskey somewhere and decided I didn't need to own it. So, yeah, this was excess.
Is this a good way to get rid of excess whiskey?
I think it's a great way, especially when people are willing to, you know, if you bought something 10 years ago for $100, people are willing to pay $400 or $500 for the same thing, and the whiskey hasn't gotten any better. So they're clearly buying it for collecting purposes. I don't think a lot of people are buying it here to drink. When I buy here, I buy here to drink, and the ones I purchased are definitely going to be enjoyed with myself and my friends.
Bonhams plans to hold its next New York auction on May 12th. Once again, the next Bonhams auction in Edinburgh is this Wednesday. I'll have the results on the next episode of WhiskeyCast. If you'd like to see some of the action from the other night, the latest episode of WhiskeyCast HD is now available with highlights of the Bonhams auction. You can watch it on YouTube or download it through iTunes. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you this time around by the Glenrothes. Before the auction started at Bonhams, there was an informal tasting, and I had the chance to taste the latest Lagavulin Distillers Edition. The 2011 edition was distilled in 1995 and finished as usual in Pedro Jimenez sherry casks, bottled at 43% ABV. The nose has a mild peatiness with touches of creosote and a slight tarriness, balanced well with good nutty notes of almond and cashew and just a hint of red grapes. The taste has a great smokiness that builds nicely with a touch of cola underneath, along with fig and raisin notes and just a hint of heather. The finish has a great mouthfeel with touches of orange, caramel candy, allspice, and nutmeg. I'm giving the 2011 Lagavulin Distillers Edition a 93. I've spent a lot of time this week tasting blind samples for a couple of competitions, but did spend some time with a sample of Rebecca Creek Fine Texas Whiskey, thanks to a friend who shall remain nameless. Rebecca Creek is a distillery in San Antonio that's maturing some single malt whiskey for release next year, but blended some of that stock with bourbon stocks from another source and neutral grain whiskey to create this whiskey. It's bottled at 40% ABV. The nose has good spices with black pepper and cinnamon and a touch of toasted oak. The taste has a nice chili powder spice that fades to reveal some lemony tartness, along with touches of fudge and dark chocolate. The finish is tart and lemony. I'm scoring the debut from Rebecca Creek an 82. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you this time around by the Glenrothes, where maturity matters. I'll be adding these notes to the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Glenrothes also brings you the Apple version, while the Android version is brought to you by Benromic. They're available at the WhiskeyCast website, and that's also where you'll find links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the photo gallery, the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, and, of course, a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. Support for WhiskeyCast comes from Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey. Find out more at redbreastwhiskey.com and join the Stillhouse to get your own personalized whiskey journal. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.